show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida here on the Head On Radio Network. I am glad to be with you today. We have so much to talk about. And I have a lot to talk about. I hope you'll have something to talk about, too. And if you do, please give us a call. 866-546-5254. We'd be happy to hear what's on your mind today, as long as it's somewhere within the realm of what we're going to talk about today. A lot going on. Junior Bush had the press conference at the Pentagon this morning. I'm sure some of you saw that. How does he do it? I do wonder every day. I wonder how he does it. The guy just, have you noticed that the smirks have been getting worse? He's standing there talking about war and death and carnage, and he's standing there smiling and grinning, and he's offensive. His actions are offensive. Didn't anybody ever teach him how to act? How to act in public? Did his mother, while his father was busy being a politician, did his mother not talk some sense, some decorum into the guy? Evidently not. Oh, my. And, of course, he sits there and talks about, well, we have to, his stupid mantra, we have to allow General Petraeus to decide what to do. Does he not know that no general in American history has ever said, let's leave, let's get out, we can't win this? Hell no. He doesn't know that. Apparently, he knows very little about American history, and he's proven that to us over and over and over again. But he stands there and laughs like a hyena when people are dying. I'm just so offended by it. And of course, I see Junior's hand puppet, Tony Blair, is finally going to give it up. And wouldn't you like to be a little fly on the wall of number 10 before he moves out of there? I think, June 27th, something like that, when he's finally leaving after just about 10 years. What do you want to bet? He's damn sorry he ever hooked up with Junior Bush on Junior's little escapade into Iraq. Betcha. Betcha he is. And, of course, we had that little visit to the White House yesterday by 11 Republicans. What do you think? Was that some sort of a meaningful gesture to stop the war, or actually get information on the war, to actually have a real dialogue? Or, and I think this is the case, I've become so cynical, was it a political ploy on their parts to show their constituents back home that they're actually doing something besides being down on their knees in front of Junior Bush? Do you think that's it? Hey, folks, we went and talked to the president, you see, and so I know a lot of you aren't happy with us, but we went and we tried, we did our best. Now, these people are butt kissers of the highest order, and that's what they were. They've serviced Junior Bush ever since he came into office, ever since they took the Congress. They've serviced him at every opportunity. They're not going to stop now. Certainly not. I see we have an Insider Advantage poll that now finds that 39% are backing impeachment of both Bush and Cheney. And you know this, that once hearings on impeachment began and the filth starts gushing out about all the illegal, immoral things that they've done, once the truth saw the light of day in front of the entire American public, and the American public would pay attention to impeachment hearings, the number, that 39%, would go markedly up. You know it would. Even Republicans would want him out of office if more of them knew the truth instead of watching Fox News every night and getting their news and their ideas from the likes of Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity. So I do not agree with the Democrats to say, oh, no, we don't want to get involved in impeachment. No, no, we don't. Yes, we do. We owe it to this nation to get involved in an impeachment. I see the company that was selling these, remember these little support our troops ribbons that everybody had in the back of their car at the start of the Gulf War? Those along with the little window flags that you saw laying by the roadside eventually. A lot of people didn't even have enough of respect for the American flag when they fell off their cars. They'd let them lay in the ditch, the American flag lay in the ditch. But then again, most of the people, well, you know what I think. But anyway, in 2004, they sold 4 million of those. Last year, they sold 48,000. It's according to Harper's Index. What else did we want to talk about today? We're going to mention Condoleezza Rice and Chevron Oil a little later. Seems to me that there is more than just cause to look into that situation about the food for oil deal in Iraq and the payoff Chevron was making and the big fine they're just about to pay. And guess who was in right in the middle of it when it was all taking place and could never deny that she didn't know anything about it. We'll talk about that a little later. We shall see. They didn't name a big tanker, the Condoleezza Rice, for nothing. The Chevron Oil Company didn't. And I did some digging yesterday concerning the Parfrey affair. That's the madam in Washington, D.C. And I'm told the reason that ABC hasn't released the names yet is because one of the names in particular is being kept secret, and it's a really big name. Now, I don't know what that means. My sources tell me that it's a really big name. Oh, please. If only. I have no idea who it is, but my sources, which include inside information from career people inside the White House, tell me the name will cause shockwaves in Washington. Well, we shall see. These sources have been good to me, have been right about 90% of the time, so we shall see. And I heard one of them again talking this last night, giving this little essay on compassionate conservatism, on Republican compassion. And I was thinking to myself, odd, isn't it, that these people so selectively display compassion for their own? Screw everybody else, but when a member of their family needs help, they'll see to it that heaven and earth has moved to aid one of their own. And I can think of several outstanding examples of what I'm talking about here. Take Nancy Reagan, for example. Okay? All right. Now, before you start in with the old, oh, no, guy, don't speak ill of an aging former first lady who's lost her husband, let me say that I do sympathize with Nancy over the plight of her husband. The only difference is that I sympathize with everyone who suffered the same fate as Ronald Reagan did physically. But Nancy Reagan was a, oh, she was a big supporter of her husband's policies of cutting taxes for the rich and the saber rattling that he liked to do, the evil empire and all that, and getting rid of the school lunch programs and taking kids off of welfare when they needed it. But when it involved her family, oh, she's all of a sudden an advocate of stem cell research, something her own husband would have had nothing to do with. Something her own party wants nothing to do with. And I don't mean this as an attack on Nancy Reagan. I'm just telling you how it is with this compassionate conservatism, which is just all so much BS. What a coincidence, after having to take care of her husband during his illness for several years, that she has some sort of an epiphany about stem cell research. After seeing the devastation Alzheimer's visits on American families close up, oh, then she changes her mind. And how about gun control? Do you know even one Republican conservative who's in favor of doing something meaningful about the gun madness in this country? I know of only one. Just one. Out of all of them that I can think of, I only know one Republican who has ever done anything or wants to do anything about any sort of meaningful gun control to take some of the arms that are in the hands of, well, just anybody who wants them off the market. And who's the one I know? James Brady. He was a confirmed advocate of Reagan's policies, which, by the way, abhorred gun control of any kind. Any idea where James Brady stands on gun control now? As I said, they have compassion for their own when their own suffer the problems that they don't want to help average Americans take care of. And Dick Cheney, what a compassionate guy. He's the most powerful man in the Republican Party. Yes, the most powerful figure in the party. And he's proudly homophobic, and he's got, you know, a party that's proudly homophobic, and he's got a lesbian daughter who, with her partner, gives birth to a child. And then when he gets asked about it by the press, Cheney gets all indignant. But, you know, I never saw Dick Cheney defending other gays. Did you? Certainly not. Only when it's in the family. And how about Trent Lott? You ask, what's Trent Lott got to do with the Republicans' lack of compassion? Well, old Trent Lott has been an advocate for big business policies of raping and pillaging the working class for all of his political Republican career. Corporate predators were fleecing the American public, and that was never a concern to the likes of Trent Lott and his ilk in the Republican Party in this conservative Ronald Reagan movement. He was all for the huge tax cuts, the bankruptcy bill, and the across-the-board cuts and much-needed social programs. But when Trent Lott lost his home in the Katrina disaster, he squealed like a stuck pig. All of a sudden, Mr. Lott found out that the big business that he had such warm feelings for all of his political career weren't such nice guys after all. They turned down his claim. And now he wants to fight the big bad insurance industry. But notice, it took losing his home before he began to take notice of the plight of others. And isn't that just how it always is with these Republican neocons? And how about Matthew Dowd? Some of you might not know who Matthew Dowd was, but Matthew Dowd was the chief campaign strategist for the 2004 Bush campaign. He loved Junior Bush and his policies. He pulled every dirty trick in the book against John Kerry. Now he's saying he was wrong. Wrong, mind you. Next to Karl Rove, this is the guy who's more responsible than anyone else to get Junior Bush a second term, and he's now saying he was wrong? Oh, could it be that his son Daniel's about to be shipped to Iraq? That's right. Another compassionate Republican whose compassion only came along when the grenade was thrown inside his front door. Now, Dowd says, and let me quote him, I do feel a calling of trying to reestablish a level of gentleness in the world, end quote. And let's not forget our good friend, Rush Pills Limbaugh. Rush's conservative compassion knew no bounds. He talked for years of how we should throw drug offenders in jail for life and throw away the key. He made fun of the treatment of prisoners in Gitmo. He even sold T-shirts, if you remember, that said Club Gitmo on them. Yes, making a buck off of it. Yes, Rush was always just about the best example of lack of compassion of Republicans until Rushy Boy himself got busted for drug abuse. Oh, what a different tune he sang then. No more talk of throwing people in jail and throwing away the key. Oh, no, sir. Rush was being persecuted by the law. It was unfair, and they were being overzealous. It was just awful. But then Rush was all of a sudden very glad to be able to be protected by a high-priced lawyer and have the money to post bail. Hypocrites all. And there's others. I don't want to, you know, there were champions, I guess you could call them, of personal responsibility, Bob Ney and Mark Foley. A thief and a pervert. And what happened when they got their asses in a sling? Oh, they ran to rehab. I didn't really do it, the alcohol did. Have compassion for me. I'm going to rehab. I, Bob Ney, and I, Mark Foley, would never have done these things had I been in my right mind, had I not been under the influence of that dreaded alcohol. So I take no personal responsibility, you see. I'm going to rehab. They ran to the protection of rehab, away from the press and personal accountability that they demanded from everybody else. Of course, Ney now has the pleasure of being the guest of the federal prison system, but not before he railed about how unfair the system was treating him. The list of compassionate conservatives who have compassion for only themselves is very long indeed. And don't forget, what was his name? David Savavian, who was being sentenced to, I think it was 18 months in prison because of his crimes committed with Jack Abramoff. And he went before the court and he pleaded for leniency. Leniency. Now, Dave, you didn't plead for leniency for anybody else. Now, did you? Oh, no. You get my point here by now. Conservatives are not capable of feeling compassion until trouble comes knocking on their own doors. And if you think that that's an awful thing, then you're absolutely right. If you think these people think nothing at all about taking a piece of bread and a bowl of soup away from some indigent adult or hungry child so that they can buy another home in the tropics, then you're right, because it's not in their makeup to feel any compassion for those who have less. All they do is throw that old pull yourself up by your bootstraps like I did, Mantra Adam. This doesn't leave us with many options. We really only have one realistic option to solve this problem. And, of course, we cannot, and nor would we want to, get rid of these kinds of people from our society. They've got a right to exist the same as we do. But what we can do is get rid of them in our government. Totally wipe them out of the seats of power in this country. We should know by now that their having the reins of power is dangerous to the greater good of the vast majority of Americans. The damage the conservative movement has done to the people of this country is absolutely incalculable. The damage that they've done to our national prestige around the world is, I think, almost beyond repair. We have every reason to shun them and keep them from power. We have to stop allowing them to use their wealth and power to force their horrible policies down our throats. And we have to stop them from advancing their agenda of unending wars and torture and piling up massive debts the working class will have to pay and keeping decent health care for only themselves. We have to stop them from ripping the Constitution of the United States to shreds when it suits them. Karl Marx said, people get the government they deserved. Don't we deserve better than this? Don't we deserve a government that will work for us instead of the rich and powerful few? I think we do. And I think we must, absolutely must, take back America. 866-546-5254. Let's head right on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
Bravo, bravo.
Thank you.
What you're saying, yes, yes. Something that corresponds to what you were talking about that I recall during the election of 2000, which I looked at everything there was to look at. And anyway, the one thing that I remember, and I don't know if it's been brought up very often, was when immediately after Gore was wanting some recount, Bush and his ilk, they went immediately to the Supreme Court to want them to take the case at that time, and the Supreme Court turned them down at that time. It was only later, after all the other goofy trials and everything that we had down here, that they did go to the Supreme Court. And the reason I'm talking about that is that the Republicans and Bush and all, I recall, when he was running for a president, was talking about getting rid of these lawsuits. These, you know, for us.
Right.
For us folks.
Good point.
And he said, it just really struck me at that time, and I thought, yeah, he wants to use it for himself, the highest court in the land. And did you know that Bush, I mean, his brother, our former governor, hired every big shot lawyer in the state of Florida.
They had an army of lawyers ready here.
Yes, there's a lot of things about that needs to be brought out, and a lot of things to be recalled. But I think that watching, I think you said you did too, watching everything on there that I could, I think I know some things. But I do remember I was so struck by, yeah, he doesn't want that for us, but he sure wants it for himself, you know, to use the law of the land for himself.
That's right.
And have all these lawyers. But no, we're not supposed to have any rights.
That's always the way it is.
Until
it comes knocking at their door.
And I think that pertains to what you're talking about, too.
Yes, it does. Thank you. Thank you, Juanita.
Okay.
Good to talk to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Ah, yes. Conservative. Who coined that phrase, compassionate conservatism? I don't know. Was it Karl Rove? I don't know, but it's such an oxymoron. Compassionate conservatism. Yeah, I heard this scholar talking about it last night, a right-wing scholar, and he was talking about the compassion of the Republicans. My word, please. Please. Ah. Cindy Sheehan coming up today at the bottom of the hour. I do want to remind you once again that next Tuesday we have Medea Benjamin from Code Pink going to be our guest then, and we've got several good guests lined up for you over the next few weeks, and we hope you'll be with us every day to hear those. We post it on the Head On Radio Network website so that you can find out who's coming up and what the show's going to be about that day, and I know a lot of you keep track of that. Anybody watching the House hearings today, John Conyers and crew? Woo. Oh, Gonzo's getting it again, isn't he? You know what? They don't care. They do not care. He's not gone anywhere. He's not going to resign. He's going to stay in there and be the whipping boy no matter what. God, I saw Gerald Nadler do a number on him this morning. Whew. Man, I'd be so humiliated if I were Gonzo, but then again, I think he's beyond that, don't you think? They have publicly humiliated him and beat him with a stick until, well, he's He's shamed forever. And yet he sits there and takes it for the good old Republican Party. For the George W. Bush Party. Yeah. Interesting. Very, very interesting. Going to pause for a break right now, and when we come back, we'll have our guest with us.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Boxed Up with John Fox. Each week, I'll feature an artist and a song with a little commentary. We'll examine why music plays such an important role in our social and political climate. We'll try and make it fun, informative, and entertaining. Join us every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, with John Fox on Boxed Up. And for music with political commentary by great liberal minds, check out my website at unreportednews.net. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Casey was a good boy. He treated people well. His mama loved him. Anyone could tell. She'd send him off to school. Pack his lunch with care, and when he came back home, she hugged him with her fingers in his hair. Cindy, she loved Casey, and when all is said and done, she's every mother, and he was every mother's son. When Casey was a little older, he spent his time each week in that church in Vacaville, in the service of the meek, in the service of his city, in the service of the Lord, with his mama in the pews, all the time they could afford. If their love alone could save us, then the world would be one. She is every mother, and he was every mother's son. People thought the priesthood was where he'd someday be, so some folks were surprised when he joined the army. The recruiter told him he didn't have to fight. Cindy hoped this was the case and prayed for him every night. That was before they sent him to the desert with a gun. She is every mother, and he was every mother's son. His truck had no armor, and when it came under fire, it and half the soldiers in it became a funeral pyre. Cindy, she was sleeping the moment Casey died, and she knew she'd never see him standing by her side. There was no consolation, no safe place she could run. She is every mother, and he was every mother's son. The president, he told her, he died for a noble cause. Now Cindy's wondering exactly what that was, 'cause they never found the weapons. And now that Casey's gone, it seems that oil's the game, and Casey's the pawn. Cindy's got some questions, yes, and so does everyone. She is every mother, and he was every mother's son.
Guy James back with you here on the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. And as promised, our special guest today, Cindy Sheehan. Cindy, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Guy. Nice to be on.
I don't know if you remember or not, but you and I met a long time ago down at the Peace House in Crawford, Texas. And on a hot summer August day, sitting out back there in the shade at the picnic tables with ice-cold drinks and so forth. It was a pleasant time, and I'll always remember that. I can't say that I'm that crazy about Crawford, Texas, but I've been better places.
I'm not about it, but yeah, it's funny. Now I own property there, so it kind of grows on you.
Do you really?
Yeah, I have 5 acres that we have Camp Casey at now. It's right, you know where the Peace House is, and you go up towards the crossroads there where mm-hmm. the Yellow Rose is and where,
yes,
you know, the gas station is, and then you turn right and go up about 3/4 of a mile, and my property's up there.
Well, I'll be.
Parkway, yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't keep track of that. Cindy, I know you've got a lot of activities planned for this weekend. I understand you're going to be participating in the anti-war Mother's Day protest outside the White House. When is that, on Sunday?
Yeah, there's the one on Sunday out in front of the White House that's sponsored by Code Pink. And then Monday, the Camp Casey Peace Institute and Gold Star Families for Peace are sponsoring the Mother of a March, and we're going to gather in Lafayette Park by the White House and march to Congress, and we're going to demand that Congress starts ending the war and starts holding George Bush and Dick Cheney accountable for their war crimes and crimes against humanity.
Well, it's been a long, hard fight for you. And by the way, Medea is going to be on the show Tuesday, and we have David Swanson on. I think it was Tuesday of this week, and next Tuesday, Medea Benjamin's going to be on. The cumulative effort of you folks, and Cindy, I really think it started with you. I can't think of anything. A real strong movement before yours that really to end this war. I can't think of anything before it. You were kind of like the pioneer of this whole thing.
Well, I think there was there of course was an anti-war movement, but it wasn't known in the mainstream. It was, I was very active in it before Camp Casey. I mean, I testified for John Conyers at the Downing Street memo hearings in June of 05 before I went to Crawford. I was one of the keynote speakers at the Veterans for Peace Convention in Dallas the day before I went to Crawford. So, there was something, but it wasn't in the mainstream and it wasn't visible enough to spark a dialogue in this country about the pros and cons. Well, the pros had always been there, but there was never, a debate in the country about the lies and about, the way the war was wrong. So I think that's what happened in August of 05. It became a mainstream movement, and that's something I think that metamorphosed into November of 06 when the Democrats took back Congress. So I think that and since then there's been so many people getting involved in the peace movement and electoral politics in a very meaningful way, and it's gratifying to me that some little thing I did turned into something that has been meaningful.
Well, it's more than a little thing. You have worked tirelessly for several years now on this. I sometimes wonder how on earth you do it. And I also wonder, you must have extremely thick skin.
I wonder how on earth I do it, too.
don't you get tired of them throwing rocks at you? I mean, verbal rocks at you and all that, and you've heard the taunts and everything else coming from the other side. Have you somehow been able to just overlook that, or in quiet moments, does it really bother you?
No, it doesn't bother me at all. What does bother me, though, is that very gullible and ignorant people watch people like Bill O'Reilly, listen to people like Rush Limbaugh, and they believe what they're told. That's what bothers me. And when I'm saying ignorant, I don't mean these people are stupid. I just mean these people are ignorant of the facts. And if they watch Fox News and listen to Rush Limbaugh, they're not getting the facts. And it bothers me that there's still 28% of America who approve of George Bush. I don't understand it, but I bet they're watching Fox News, and that's where they get their news. And it doesn't bother me that they attack me. What do they think they're going to do to me? I buried my son. What do they think they can do that's worse to me than burying a son? So, my mom always told me sticks and stones and consider the source. But what really, truly, truly bothers me is there are some people – in this country who still believe anything that those people say.
Oh, they do. Let me ask you, are you finding these days, I noticed you were at the hearings a while back and so forth, and the Code people, well, the Code Pink people were there. Are you finding certain Congress people to be more receptive to your movement now?
Well, there's always been that, the segment of Congress, you know, like the Out of Iraq caucus, the Progressive caucus, that have been very receptive and worked with me, Gold Star Families, and other people in the peace movement. And we've been working, you know, since I've been in the movement, I've been working with these people, you know, like John Conyers and Lynn Woolsey, Dennis Kucinich, Maxine Waters, Barbara Lee. You know, they've always been really good allies. And, you know, now you would think that since the Democrats are, you know, the majority, that, that people like that would have a stronger voice in what's going on, because they really are reflecting the majority of the American public. And, you know, we're disappointed that the Democrats aren't working harder and being the true opposition party that they need to be against the Bush regime. So there are, I think that they're making baby steps, but they're baby steps in the right direction. But I think that we still have to work just as hard as we did before to get anything done.
Well, the problem is, I guess, and I probably shouldn't say it that way. If more people were in your shoes, if more people were in your shoes and had lost a son or had lost a neighbor or a family member and all, we'd have the same kind of outcry that we had during Vietnam. But unfortunately, in this war, so very few are having to shoulder the entire burden. So very many of this, of the military personnel, and so very few of the families, and so it's all been you know, the burden that should be the burden of a nation has all been put on just a few of you, and that's a very sad thing. I don't know how you do it. I really don't.
Well, you know, the neocons have been working very cleverly to keep war as far away as from as many people as they can. You know, they will never reinstitute the draft. They know that would be disastrous for their policies of constant war and for imperialism. They don't let us see the flag-draped coffins coming home. Whenever we hear news from Iraq, it's always news from the green zone. And so and we don't have to even sacrifice by paying more taxes. They're borrowing all the money from China and Japan that they're waging this war on. They're borrowing it off the backs of our children and grandchildren. And, you know, they've been very clever in keeping this war away from us. And I think that's why it was so effective in August of 2005, because it was the first time that the American public had seen what support of the war, their support of the war, the suffering that it caused.
Exactly.
And it also, I wasn't the only mom out there. There was moms and dads and aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters, and there were veterans, and there were Iraq veterans. And so, you know, they were able to finally count the cost, that they hadn't had to pay at all. And, you know, that, I think, you know, we have the public opinion on our side now overwhelmingly.
Yes.
But we need to see these bodies out on the streets with us if we think we're going to make any change.
Well, Cindy, I've never asked anybody this question, and you mentioned it there just a moment ago about the flag-draped coffins coming home. And I've heard the excuse made, well, it's out of respect for the privacy of the families that we don't show that when they come back to Dover and all. I'd like to know your opinion. Shouldn't that be a national spectacle of respect for every flag-draped coffin that comes back to Dover, and an honor guard to greet him and put it on TV so people can see exactly the results of this war?
Well, I agree. I think that they, you know, the government doesn't do it out of their shame. And, you know, why do they parade, you know, since Casey died, Ronald Reagan and Gerald Ford have died. Why do they parade them around and, you know, show their flag-draped coffins? Are they disrespecting their families? You know, I think that, and in Virginia Tech, when those students died, the flags were half-mast nationally for a week. Why aren't the flags half-mast for our kids every day?
For the duration of this.
Right. I mean, our kids need to be honored.
And absolutely.
I think, you know, that we also we don't see the pain, but we're not allowed to honor the sacrifices either.
I just think that most families would want their kids honored when they come home in a coffin like that. I think it would be a good thing. But
you know, we don't know who's in those coffins. You know, but the country needs to know the pain that's caused by their support of what's going on. Or if they don't support it, their apathy and not getting out in the streets to help us stop it. The country needs to see that.
They sure do. And unfortunately, the media has been complicit in all this, hasn't done a very good job of getting the word out, getting the pictures out. And, Cindy, the march coming up, what is it, Sunday? Again, that's the one that's going to be at Lafayette Park?
No, the one that we're sponsoring, the Mother of a March, is on Monday, and we decided to do a march on a weekday instead of a weekend, so people, you know, the policymakers and the people who work in Washington, D.C. would actually be there.
Okay, and that's on Monday. What time is it going to be?
We're gathering in Lafayette Park at noon.
Okay, and
That's right in front of the White House on the Pennsylvania Avenue side.
Information on this, is there someone where a site where everybody can go take a look if they need some information on it?
Right, they can go to the CampKCPeaceInstitute.org.
Okay, CampKCPeaceInstitute.org. Well, right. Cindy, I want to thank you so very much for all you've done and all you're continuing to do to bring this horrible nightmare, put it in front of the face of the American public so they can understand it. I think you've done many wonderful things, and continued success, and there'll be much rejoicing when we finally have a victory and stop this horrible war.
There absolutely will. Then we can take a couple days off and start trying to prevent the next one.
You bet. Cindy Sheehan, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Anytime, and it was great talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Cindy Sheehan, you can say what you want about Cindy Sheehan. People have thrown rocks at her. They've singled out statements that she's made and made big issues of it. She's a bereaved mother, acting in the way I think a bereaved mother should. She knows this war was wrong. She knows it was wrong from the get-go. She knows that there was never any good to come of it. There never will be any good to come of it. And all this woman has tried to do for the last several years is tried to keep other mothers from suffering the heartache and the pain of losing their children to a war that never, never should have been. She's a very strong woman. I don't know how she does it. I really don't. I would have buckled by now. Withering assaults from people on the other side. The disgraceful email that was going around for a while about the gravestone on Casey's grave that had a perfectly reasonable explanation, the whole story did. And yet, anything they could do to discredit her or to cause her even more pain or to keep her from this mission of trying to put an end to this war, they have done. Shameful. Shameful. Let's go over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Francesca. I'm calling from Nova Scotia.
Yes.
I just want to say thanks so much for having her today, this amazing woman, and she's just been such an inspiration, I think, to me and to lots of people, and she just seems to have an endless amount of energy, you know? and it's tremendous. So thank you for doing that.
Well, you're very welcome.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to Medea Benjamin next week, and she's another one. I think, you know, these are just very courageous women. They're very clear thinking. They really are committed and creative, and they just also seem to manage to avoid the negativity. I mean, these are very negative things that they're working towards to end, but they themselves are not negative people, you know?
Yes, yes.
And I think that's also a good model for everyone who's considering, you know, becoming more active.
Indeed. You know, so, you know, Francesca, you're so right. So many people, a lot of people, well, they don't put their actions where their mouth is. And these people have.
Yeah, and, you know, because people are afraid that they're going to lose their jobs and their friends and their whatever, but, you know, in the end, you have to ask, what is life really for, you know, and is it for comfort or is it for learning? Is it for the right, you know, standing up for what you believe in or being, you know, sheltered and, you know, and none of us is actually going to be free of the damage that's being caused by this Bush administration. A lot of us have already been suffering, as you were saying yesterday, I think, about the wages not increasing for the last 7 years. Was that you?
Yes.
Talking about that?
Yes.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's incredible because, I mean, in my life, I don't remember any period of time where people's pay wasn't rising in some steady rate. And, you know, I don't understand why people aren't outraged about that. But going back to what you were saying at the beginning of the show about Gonzalez, and I totally agree with you that it looks like he's not going to resign. I was convinced at the beginning of these investigations he's not going anywhere. It's a lot like Rumsfeld not resigning over Abu Ghraib, you know, waiting a couple of years till the next election to do it.
Sure.
And, you know, it's incredibly blatant and shameless behavior that is hard. It's just hard to fathom from these people, but at the same time, it's a real warning because it shows that, you know, when you can seize power in the way that Bush did, you don't have to have any regard for any other laws.
That's right. A true gang of sociopaths have no regard for others whatsoever.
You know, and I do think that, you know, whatever we can consider the opposition in the country is very weak because it's so fragmented. We're just too fragmented. And the only things, I mean, I was listening to, who's that other radio guy in Michigan? Oh, I'm going to lose my memory now. Anyway, he was being accused of, Tom Hartman was being accused of not being left enough recently and not being, you know, not being outspoken enough and going out for things like a national strike and, you know, things that are more radical. And, you know, there's something to that in a way. But we don't have a tradition of that in the States.
No. No, we don't.
And people are really, they just don't get that point, that idea. They don't see that happening. Tom Hartman's response was, we should have the unions. You've got to make the unions do it. But that's not true. You know, you can have anybody go.
We barely have any unions anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. And, you know, I also wonder when I hear about things that are being done to the military, by the military, you know, what's going to push them to actually start revolting? I'm sure, in fact, you know, it's possible that there are things happening. There are mutinies, there are revolts going on. There were some in Vietnam, you know, that the soldiers refused to obey orders and left and so on and, you know, or shot their commanding officers. We wouldn't even know, but it, you know, I wonder when the day will come when they finally do that. I mean, I'm always reminded of the German, you know, revolution in 1918-1919 that happened after they lost World War One. It was the returning soldiers, you know, who were ragged and you know, just absolutely worn out and angry at their Kaiser who fled before they got to Berlin, before the soldiers actually accumulated in Berlin as they returned because they started attacking his palace and he went to Belgium or something, you know, and that launched a whole political revolution and a whole new change of government and a whole new change of society and so on. They started building social housing and, you know, building schools and so on. They totally turned around the entire country, and it was triggered by that because the people didn't do it themselves, you know. So that's one scenario, but
well, and one of the other important areas right now is too, and from what I hear, and I think it's starting to leak out quite a bit. There's considerable dissonance taking place inside the walls of the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
Many of our military leaders are, you know, by duty having to go along with this commander in chief, but are literally ashamed of this mission and the way it's gone.
But But many have also left during the last six
yes.
years. Also in the CIA, right? They've really pushed people away.
Yes.
Pushed them out. So I don't know if there's enough left within the Pentagon. It's a good question, though, to really have a kind of, what do we would call it, a powers coup or something.
Yeah, they've had a purge. All they want is good
yes.
good Bushies in the CIA
yeah.
and in the Pentagon.
It's so Soviet. It's
yeah.
so Russian. I mean, it's amazing.
It is.
The control of the press and the treatment of people, you know, these sort of, I don't know, all these cases, I mean, it's just incredible. And I really do wonder what would be the turnaround. But I do think that impeachment, you know, it has a window of opportunity. If it's not done by the summer, I don't see an opportunity in the future to turn things around in any sort of, you know, effective way.
Well, if they don't start it by summer, there won't be any use starting it because they wouldn't have
yeah.
time to do it.
No, and it would have to be criminal prosecution after that. They could
yeah.
still prosecute after that. But no one would probably sustain that, I don't think. But you know, the Democrats want to, they seem to want to try everything else, you know, but impeachment. They're doing these different investigations and so on. They're asking they're subpoenaing, you know, to Rove and so on. And they should know by now it's not going to work.
No.
They should know that they're going to simply refuse and stonewall and destroy documents. It's all, you should expect that. From this kind of government and from their past history. And I just wonder, why do they waste the time doing this? The only effective tool, the only real way to get them, you know, to be accountable, to punish them, and to expose the truth is impeachment. That's it.
Well, and you know, punishment is the right word. There
yeah.
are some people in this government that need to be punished.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. It's the most blatant crimes. And the rest of the world is never going to accept America again as a morally, you know, balanced, let's say,
no.
not perfect,
no.
but morally balanced nation until they see, you know, that we take our leaders seriously, we take their crimes seriously, and that we hold them accountable. You know, justice is an important thing. And, I mean, God, they're torturing innocent people. Even if they you know what? Even if they tortured criminals, they would still be wrong. Because torture is just wrong.
Wrong is wrong.
You know? And people seem to say, you know, to themselves, well, you know, they must have done something if they're being detained. Well, no, guess again, you know. They're losing their lives. They're losing their, you know, their families are being destroyed. They, you know, the man that they sent to Syria who was tortured for 2 years based on absolute fabrication from the CIA, you know, the Canadians used, and then they seized him at JFK, and they whisked him off to Syria, which is supposed to be on our list of what do they call it?
It makes no difference. You know, there's no honor amongst thieves.
Yeah. So there you go. And then, you know, it's just amazing wherever you look, wherever you direct your gaze at this administration, at the, you know, the number of horrors and atrocities going on, the, you know, the people that are stirring up trouble in Iran and so on. I mean, it's just incredible. So I look back at the Democrats and I just say, what are you people waiting for? Who are you, you know, what TV show are you watching?
Right, right. I feel the same way. I'm terribly exasperated right now with my party. They're not doing enough. They're not doing what we sent them to do there. And yes, they're having some hearings and so forth. And there may be some good come out of it, but they're not doing the hardcore work I sent them there to do. Francesca, I want to thank you so much for being on the program. I have a dear, dear friend who's from Nova Scotia and lives in the winters here in Florida.
Uh-huh.
And this coming week, he's doing the snowbird thing and heading back to Nova Scotia. He always stays until this time of year. So,
well, it's a good week because it just started warming up the last
week. Well, that's what he said. He said it's safe to go now.
It's kind of, you know, the longer I stay here, it's interesting. I moved here from Kentucky, and the place is really a lot like the Appalachia of the North. I mean, first of all, they love bluegrass music, and they play it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it has an economy that's kind of been slowed down and held back a lot, and the education levels are kind of low, and so the job opportunities. It just reminds me a lot of Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
But the people are also just, you know, they're very sweet, and it is a nice place.
Well, my friend, who happens to be a Frenchman, really, he loves it there. Thank you so much for your call, and thank you for your request to get Medea on.
We
got at that right away, and we'll have her on Tuesday.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you.
All right, keep
bye-bye.
Keep up a good eye. And as they say here, keep your stick on the ice.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yes, keep your stick on the ice, these hockey people. You know, I grew up in a rural area in Ohio that we didn't have hockey. And therefore, I never became a hockey fan because there just wasn't any hockey. I see they have a hockey team in Columbus now. But I don't know anything about them because I don't follow them because, you know, not doing it when I was a kid. Why? Just don't have any interest in it. Same way with soccer. Just can't get involved with soccer because when you don't play it when you're a kid and grow up around it, why, it's hard to develop an interest in it. We were the basketball, baseball, track kind of people. Went to a school so small that we didn't even have football. Can you imagine that? I'm sure there are others of you that are in the same boat, but a very small rural school that if we'd have taken all the boys in high school, we wouldn't have had enough to make a squad for a football team. Why am I telling you this? I don't know. You're probably sitting there saying, yes, why indeed is he telling us this? Coming up in the second hour, I have a story to tell you. A note that I got from a gentleman named David. And David, if you're listening, we're going to talk about this after the top of the hour. We'll have Bruce from Talking Radio on, and we'll talk about this. But I have a lot of important things to talk about today, but I'm going to set some of them aside and talk about this story from this gentleman, David. It's a story you have to hear. It's a story you will not want to hear. It's a story that'll bring a tear to your eye, as it did to mine. But it's a story that must be told, and we will tell you all about it after, sometime after the top of the hour, after Bruce calls in today. I think he's planning on calling in today. And also, I do want to get around to talking about this Condi Rice thing. You know all the good times the neocons had with the oil for food scandal that took place in the UN and Kofi Annan's son and all that, and how they just scandalized Kofi Annan because his son was involved in some of that, and the French, and you know they persecuted everybody that were involved in that, and now. We find that quite possibly, and it looks like it's highly likely to me, that our esteemed Secretary of State, Madam Secretary of State, may be up to her eyeballs in this mess herself. Chevron Oil Company, negotiating with the United States prosecutors over fines that'll be $25 to $30 million, according to investigators. What's $25 to $30 million to Chevron Oil Company? Practically nothing. It's the same as you and I pulling $2 out of our pocket. Maybe a quarter. I'm not sure. I haven't done the math on it. But five companies that bought oil through the program from Saddam Hussein. The Coastal Corporation, a subsidiary of El Paso, Chevron, Texaco, Bay Oil, and Mobil, now part of ExxonMobil. Companies have denied any wrongdoing and said they were cooperating with the investigations. Oh, gee, that somebody would accuse the very righteous and moral oil companies of doing something wrong, of greasing somebody's palms illegally, so that they could make a buck. How could anybody ever insinuate such a thing? And so we'll talk about that after the top of the hour. Looking through the stack of things here we wanted to get through today, we're never going to get through them. You know, she brought that up in the call, really. The magnitude of the depravity of this party is stunning when you stop and think about it, which I try not to do in order to maintain a semblance of sanity. You know, Iraq is bad enough, but when you consider Abu Ghraib, the rendition, and Gonzales, and the response to Katrina, and the destruction of habeas corpus, not to mention the politicization of the Department of Justice and the GSA and the suppression of minority votes in the last few elections, we're witnessing the unraveling of a republic right in front of our eyes. Truly, we are. We are the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, and we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. We hope you'll stay with us through the news and come back. We've got another good hour of programming coming up. So good to hear from Cindy. We've had her on the show before, and when we went and did the show from Crawford, Texas, Cindy was so gracious down there as well. Owns property in Crawford, Texas now. That's a good one. Well, this is the Guy James Show and the Head On Radio Network, and we'll be back right after the news, and I expect you to be here.
This is the Quality News Network. English Prime Minister Tony Blair has formally announced he will be stepping down as Britain's Prime Minister in late June. A member of the Liberal Labour Party, Blair served for 10 years and is the only person or the second person to do so in 100 years. Fellow Labour Party member and Finance Minister Gordon Brown is the favourite to succeed Blair. House members are expected to vote today on a two-step war funding bill that President Bush has promised to veto. The measure would provide roughly half the funding until July, and then the second half of the war money would be given after a progress report and a second congressional vote. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said such a plan would be disruptive. In Los Angeles, the Griffith Park fire that has threatened historic landmarks and pricey real estate is expected to be fully contained by nightfall if weather continues to cooperate. The urban blaze thus far has charred 817 acres and is the third fire in the famed Hollywood Hills this year. Embattled Bank President Paul Wolfowitz has been given an additional week by the board of the World Bank to defend himself against accusations of nepotism. Wolfowitz has been under attack since it was revealed he'd given a promotion and raise to his girlfriend. Wolfowitz has ignored the demands for his resignation. Iraqi soldiers killed one insurgent and stopped an attack by militants on a hospital in the Armaya district of Baghdad. Three Iraqi soldiers were wounded as they engaged the terrorist in the back of the hospital, where bags of explosives and weapons were found. In Gaza, rival forces from Hamas and Fatah are joining together to crack down on violence in the Palestinian territories. The security operation involves 3,000 men from the opposing factions. Leaders say dramatic safety improvements could be achieved within 48 hours. In East Timor, resistance leader and Nobel Peace Prize winner José Ramos Horta has been elected president of the tiny island country. It is the nation's first free election since it won independence from Indonesia 5 years ago. In Oregon, the governor has signed a measure creating domestic partnerships for gay and lesbian couples. He also okayed a law banning discrimination based on sexual orientation. In Alabama, a 73-year-old retired state trooper has been indicted for the 1965 shooting death of a young black man during a civil rights demonstration. The murder sparked protests and contributed to the passage of the Voting Rights Act. And the U.S. Treasury Department is investigating documentary filmmaker Michael Moore for violating a travel ban to Cuba. Moore took ailing 9/11 rescue workers to Havana for treatment. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
We want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea, on California's beautiful central coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple keystrokes and you're visiting a beautiful website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for. Quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, quiet, and the best shops, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that honest information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway, carmel.com.
Entomologists report the cousin of the notorious black widow spider, the brown widow spider, has been increasingly spotted in Louisiana. Bug experts say the eight-legged creature can be brown or grayish in color, with a yellowish-orange hourglass on its belly. It is believed the spider likely migrated from Florida. In Greece, archaeologists have unearthed a 2,700-year-old piece of cloth. The yellow and brittle fabric was found in Argos and is thought to be part of a burial ceremony that resembles those described in Homer's Iliad. Researchers say to find fabric is extremely rare because it's organic and decomposes easily. Rupert Murdoch's News Corp posted a quarterly increase in profit topping 6%. The company cited robust growth in home video sales and advertising revenues from its Fox News channel. Nikon says its annual profits nearly doubled. Annual sales rose 13% to nearly $7 billion. The Japanese company credited robust growth in its camera and semiconductor equipment units. Daimler Chrysler broke ground yesterday on its second automotive factory in India. Production is expected to begin in 2009. Construction of the facility is costing Daimler $67 million. India is one of the world's fastest-growing markets in luxury goods. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.72 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And on Wall Street, the Dow Jones is down 109 points, the NASDAQ is down 29, and the S&P 500 is down 14 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed, Guy James with you here on the Guy James Show, part of the Head On Radio Network. And do want to let you know that music director Billy Shears has supplied all the music we play today. And we're very happy for that. I do want to let you know that Billy's got his Thursday night special up at unreportednews.net. It's the final installment, the fourth installment. I think it's the final one of the Billy Joel story. You'll want to read that. Very, very, very good. Billy does a great job on those. And that's at unreportednews.net. And just check on the Billy Shears logo on the left side there, and you'll get to hear the other story about Billy Joel. Very, very interesting. I like that a lot. Just was listening to the opening of the program there when John Kennedy says, ask not what you can do, what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. I've listened to that for 47 years. And I don't think that every day on this show, twice on this show, and every time I've ever heard that, in the past 47 years, I don't think there's ever been a time the hair didn't stand up on the back of my neck. That thrilled me so much. It was a great time in my life. Great time in many Americans' lives. It was a time when America had a lot of national prestige. And I don't want to cut down Eisenhower. We'll not cut down Dwight Eisenhower. We went through a time that I suppose this nation needed. It was a very quiet time. Very peaceful time. The country was suffering, and I don't know if suffering is the right word, from a malaise, I suppose you could say. My father always had a good time calling Eisenhower that do-nothing Eisenhower. But maybe a whole lot didn't need to be done. You know, we're coming out of the war years, maybe it was time. And we had great prosperity. People started building homes like never before, and families were starting to get the second car. And we did okay during the Eisenhower administration. There was ups and downs, but there was something magical. Something magical about John Kennedy taking that oath of office. And yes, you can go ahead and throw the barbs at John Kennedy about some philandering and all that sort of thing, but he, you know, it's a saying that's been worn out about a breath of fresh air, but oh my God, there was a breath of fresh air when the Kennedy administration took over this country. It was something that I don't think this nation had ever experienced before. A youthful young president, a beautiful young wife, little John, my God, Caroline, you think back at the tragedy that's been in that family with the son being gone and all that now, but I reminisce, I know, but it was a special time, and would that we could go back to a time like that, have another president like that, that could excite the country and bring the country together. And John Kennedy did that. Yes, he had some enemies. He had some enemies. But by and large, the country came together during his administration. And it was, you know, the Cold War was in full bloom there and all. But it was a good time. And we need another man like that. We need a leader. We need somebody that can step up that the American public can look at and say, yes, I have confidence in this man. That's what we need. I want to tell you a story right now that's difficult for me to tell you. But it's something you need to hear. We should all hear it. And it's about our country, and it's about the people of our country, and it's about the government of our country, and after all, we are the government of this country. Sometimes I don't think so. But you need to hear this. The dear guy. It's a letter. If you could please mention this, it would be greatly appreciated. My grandson Jacob lost his battle and passed away last Friday night. He was born with spina bifida and Arnold Chiara malformation. We just couldn't conduct enough car washes or sell enough donuts to raise the $200,000 for him to receive more surgery. He was on Medicaid, so many doctors just turned us away, and private insurance would not cover him. All this in the wealthiest pro-life country, which spends $10 billion per month murdering innocent human beings. All this in a country where the president vetoes funds for stem cell research. Thanks for the love and support. We now have to raise $850 for them to dig his grave and a $1,700 deposit for the funeral home. This will still leave a huge balance just to lay him to rest. This is due to the fact that he was uninsurable to the wonderful insurance companies. Anyone who wishes to contribute can donate to the same page, and I'll give you that in just a moment. Any donations would be appreciated. There's also a link on the head-on main page, jacobcatofund.zoomshare.com. That's Jacob, J-A-C-O-B, C-A-T-O-E-F-U-N-D.zoomshare, Z-O-O-M-S-H-A-R-E.com. There's a link to his obituary and guest book, www.legacy.com/florence/news/obituaries.asp? Page equals life story. I should find a way to post this, and I will do that. Put it on the chat room. But if you could please mention this, it would be greatly appreciated. Our government showed its true colors with Jacob. South Carolina Social Services forced my daughter, a single parent, to take a job because they wouldn't help support her due to, quote, welfare reform. She had a fully disabled child and had to survive on a meager Social Security disability check. And we're now trying to raise the funds for Jacob's funeral expenses. I hope the pro-life crowd is happy now. David. How do you respond to this? How do we live in a country, as David rightly points out, that is still the wealthiest nation on earth, and the wealth has gravitated to a select few? A government that doesn't take care of its people. Health-wise. It makes me ashamed. It makes me so ashamed that this could happen in the country I was born in, raised in love. And it makes me so ashamed that the fact that if there's anything at all, that people in a decent society owe one another, it is health care. And the neocons will fight this till hell won't have it, till we get health care. But I will never, ever consider this country complete and fully moral and righteous until we have universal health care in this country for everybody. The last thing that should be on your mind when you have a horrible disease like this mother here, anybody that comes down with anything, the last thing that should have to be on your mind is the expense. Will they take my house away? Will I lose everything I have? Will I lose my savings? Will I be destitute just because I had the misfortune to come down with some sort of a malady or illness? Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Phil up in Daytona Beach. How are you?
Hi, Phil.
Well, that was hi, and how are you wasn't a good question there. I wanted to answer your question or suggest an answer. Is it on the Guy James Show webpage?
It is not on my webpage. I'm going to put it up on the chat room right now.
Oh, okay, because my computer's not allowing me to get into the chat room. It's probably not you guys, it's probably me, of course, but if it's at all possible to access this letter, I think what we can do, those of us who do have printers and fax machines or even an envelope, is to mail it to these congressmen and these senators, you know? I mean, I think the letter speaks for itself. God, if you read that and you're not moved, you ain't human.
That's right.
You know, but I don't want to take up the line. I call in a lot, so let someone else call in. But I'm thanks again, Guy, for another great show and a great program.
Thank you, Phil. Good to
Thank
hear from you.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to try and post as much of this as I can on the chat room here and talk to you at the same time. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Susan from Columbia City. I'm one of the news ninjas.
Yes.
If the people go to the main site and click on news, and then just a little bit down the page, there's a search box. It says search the horn. If they type in, Jacob has lost his battle, that will bring up the post that I put up that contains his obituary, where they can make memorials, and where they can go to sign a guest book.
Okay. Okay, good. Good. And Elo has just posted the obit on the chat room, and I posted they came up with a wonderful montage of David did of photographs. I don't know if you have that posted or not, but
yeah, it has a link directly to
okay.
the site.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, good. Somebody says, Susan on the chat room says, Susan, the link to the guest book is wrong.
Oh.
Now, whatever that means, I don't know. But maybe you can check it out.
I'll have to fix it.
Okay. All right.
I will fix it right away then.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you, guy. You have a nice day.
Yeah. Bye now.
Bye.
This is just so sad, and I don't bring this up to make everybody maudlin and sad and so forth, but it's reality. It's healthcare in the United States. You know, if we were sitting here talking and we lived in Uganda or Albania or Estonia or some other place on this planet, Guatemala, then we might be able to understand some of this. I don't think I still would, but at least it would help. But we live in the United States of America. And we owe each other this. And I know the neocons have a fit hearing that. Oh, we don't owe each other anything. We've got to do it all ourselves. We got to do it all for ourselves. That's not what the government's for. Bull. Bull. Well, take note of all those links. They're up on the chat room right now. And again, take a look at the Head On Radio Network and go to that site the search, Jacob has lost his battle. Type that in. You'll get all the information on there. And again, for those of you listening that are not on Head On right now, and I know many of you are not, Jacob Cato, CatoFund, .zoomshare, ZoomShare.com. Help out on this, won't you? I know many of you will. Not something that's fun to talk about on the program, but got to be done. It's reality. Well, what should we do? Somebody asked me to play this by RFK. It's way off the subject, but let's start a new subject right now. RFK Jr. gave a terrific speech just a week or so ago. No? I guess we have to put that off for just a little bit. Okay, we'll put that off for a little while. Hopefully we'll get to it today. If not, we'll start in it on Tuesday. Where were we here? You know, somewhere along the line, this fiasco that's taking place in Iraq, it has to come to some sort of a resolution. And I heard Bush today in his Pentagon press conference, whatever you want to call it. It was an obscenity to me. Talking about, we can't, you know, once again, we can't micromanage this. We got to let the generals do it, blah, 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 blah. He didn't mention that the Iraqi lawmakers are now rejecting the occupation and going to try and pass a bill in the Iraqi parliament to boot America's asses, uninvite us right out of their country like they ever invited us in the first place. But they may have enough people now in their parliament on their side. They need 138 to pass anything. They've got 275 members when they show up. And they say they've got 144 of them signed onto a legislative petition calling on the United States to, get this, the United States to set a timetable for withdrawal. This is something Bush saying, well, we just can't do. We can't send it. Well, the Iraqis themselves are going to ask for a timetable for us to get out. So don't be preaching to us, Junior. The Iraqis want us out of their country. Who can blame them? Can you imagine having a foreign army in your country patrolling your streets with guns, kicking your doors in the middle of the night? Humvees running everywhere. Your kids can't go out and play. You can't go to the park. You can't go to work sometimes. You can't do this. You can't do that. It'd be hard to buy groceries. You don't have electricity most of the time. Can you imagine living like that? So it's no wonder they want us out of their country. But really, I think somewhere along the line, in Iraq, Junior Bush began to equate leaving Iraq with losing in Iraq. And it's been 4 years, just over 4 years, since he stood on the deck of an aircraft carrier in his little Ken doll flight suit and declared that major combat operations were over. I know you all remember that. That's indelibly imprinted in my mind. Yet, should his political opponents even dare to suggest that that means our troops should come home, he throws a hissy fit worthy of a little kid whose parents are trying to take his toys away. That's just the way he acts over it. Junior Bush repeats over and over that U.S. troops are going to remain in Iraq until the job is done. And what that means, no one, not even Junior Bush himself, I think, is sure. When will the job be done? How will we know? And like somebody said, it's not like the Iraqi government's going to present us with the final bill next week, all itemized, and have us sign it and move our stuff out. Maybe that's what Junior's wishing for. But this failure in chief continues to say, as he said, preparing to veto a bill by Democrats calling for an end to the war, that withdrawal would be a failure. And I quote him, he said, everybody in this room knows the consequences of failure in Iraq, unquote. But he does not explain why withdrawal and failure are the same thing. It's no secret, and it's no secret to me what you think, and it's no secret what I think, that this war was a horrible mistake. It was terribly handled, and it ought to be ended as soon as we can possibly do it. But leaving, and if this is the problem with the American psyche, and I know it is on the Republican side, especially, I think many Democrats could accept the fact that, okay, we lost a war. Hey, we lost a war one other time. We lost in Vietnam, period. That was no peace with honor crap, boy, but believe what you want. We lost that war. So, I think it's not within the neocon mindset to be able to even accept that. I think on the Democratic side, many of us of the liberal persuasion, we can accept that. Hey, we were in a war. We lost. Okay, let's move on. But I don't think leaving necessarily has to mean losing, if that's their problem. It could mean some sort of a recognition, even from the Bushes and the war's very staunchest defenders, that there's nothing more to be done there militarily. An admission that the military mission is, in fact, over with. Why can't they say that? We all know that there's nothing left but a political resolution to this. This will not be solved militarily. I think anybody with a brain knows that. It will not. And leaving doesn't have to mean abandonment either. You know, we hear that all the time from the Republicans. Well, we just can't abandon them. You know, if Americans feel it's worth the investment, they can continue to support the reconstruction and peacekeeping efforts in Iraq. And the wealthy private contractors, like those already reaping the benefits of warfare, can keep right on providing security and putting people into positions of authority in that war-torn country, as they do in so many other dangerous regions across the globe. So leaving does not have to mean a total abandonment there. And, you know, now we're starting to hear from the neocons that, oh, we're accountable. Well, like they're really going to account for what they've done there. But leaving doesn't have to mean giving up accountability either. Not at all. We'll talk a little bit more about this later, but some of these neocons got some very strange ideas. Very strange. And, man, they're sticking to them, aren't they? 866-546-5254. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
When the job is done, Guy.
Yeah, when the job is done.
It's Dave from California.
Hi, Dave.
Know that. But what does that mean? Because I see this is all what Eisenhower had warned us about, the military-industrial complex making big, big bucks by their occupation. They are transferring the treasury of the United States into the Carlyle Group, the little PNAC group, and they're doing it in the billions.
You know, Dave, that couldn't be any more obvious if they had semi-truckloads of money with dollar signs on the side driving down the road hauling it to their places. It couldn't be any more obvious.
Just throwing out terms like when the job is done, it would be losing the war. What the failure that would be. It would be for Halliburton, and it would be for Cheney, and it would be for Bechtel and Lockheed Martin. You know, all of those big, big corporate giants that are raping this country, taking everything that they can, inflicting all kinds of harm on that country, and all for their profits. And it's just, it is so criminal. I so appreciate you coming. You call it, Guy. And we need to hear it. We need to deal with a reality that is just so damn ugly, it's hard to imagine that it could be that bad. Yep.
Ugliest thing in my lifetime in this country, without question. Yes, we've suffered terrible tragedies, 9/11 and Katrina and all that, but this ongoing debacle is the worst thing that I've seen in my years in this country.
All based on lies, and there's still some people stupid enough to believe it. Every once in a while, one of them calls you.
Right, right. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Dave, I'm terribly afraid the Democrats are going to cave here in the next day. I don't know if the votes come up yet this afternoon. If not, I think it'll come up tomorrow. I'm just afraid they're going to cave. I think the moderate conservative Democrats are going to cave, and they're going to give Bush that bill that he wants without any restrictions on it. And I'm just going to be mortified, as will millions of other people. But I'm worried about it.
Well, I've told you about our blue dog Democrat up here in the 1st Congressional District of California, Mike Thompson. He talks an awfully good game about how he's so with the peace lovers, that he wants to get us out of Iraq as soon as possible, but throws up every block he can and votes against it every way he can. He's on the take from some of the big special corporate special interests. They share their wealth with some of the politicians.
Sure.
And I fear that too many of our Congress members are owned by them. But I'll tell you what's happening right now. The California Democrats have just been totally, completely taken over by the progressives and calling for impeachment and calling for an end of this war ASAP. The county that I live in now has been totally taken over by the progressives. And Congressman Mike Thompson is a member of that party. And they're no longer able to just do the tap dance down the middle. Right now, it's strictly everybody that listens to you, to Tom, and to others have gone there and taken over the party. And I hope it's happening everywhere.
I certainly I called my representative this morning, one Republican, Connie Mack. And gave them an earful, but you know that's going to go. I was barking up the wrong tree. He's a Bush.
Part of the crime.
Oh, he's a Bushy through and through. He's the biggest ass kisser that there could be in Washington D.C. And I wish he were listening right now. In fact, I think I'll call him and tell him that. But anyway, it's a shame when you know that the majority of the people, the vast majority of the people in this country, want us out of this war right now, and a few people are keeping us in it. That's all wrong. That's not America. That's not how it should work.
Our country has been stolen by criminals.
It has.
We still have the machines they did it with.
It has indeed. Thank you, Dave. Good to hear from you.
Thank you for being there, guys.
Thank you. You know, stop and think about it. Something like high 60s or 70, low 70% of the people now think that the war is mismanaged. Most people and a vast majority think it never should have happened in the first place. The sentiment for getting out is overwhelming by the whole nation, Republicans and Democrats. Why aren't we getting out? Why are a few people holding us hostage to this whole thing? And just like Dave said, they're holding us hostage to the vast military-industrial complex and the profits of the Halliburtons and the Beck Patels and the KBRs and the Raytheons and all the rest. How can this be that we've allowed this country to get in this mess? Well, somehow we did. We're going to pause for a break right now. We'll be back. Don't go away.
I'm shouting all about love. Well, they cheated you like a dog. And you were the one who had made it so clear all those years ago. Talking all about how to give. They don't act with much honesty. Someone, the devil's best friend, someone who abandoned all. We're living in a bad dream. They've forgotten all about mankind. And you were the one they backed up to the wall all those years ago. You were the one who imagined it all those years ago.
Stop.
How'd you like it? Any of those, any of you watching the hearings today, the John Conyers in charge there, how the pubbies, the Republicans, try so hard. You talk about a bunch of brown nosing. Since we're on internet radio, I could say what I think of them, but I'm going to spare you some of the invectives that I might put forth here. But, oh my God, so the speeches that a couple of the Republicans gave today in defense of Albert Gonzalez, I was thinking, why don't you just go down to the White House, walk into the Oval Office, and ask a Mr. Junior President there to drop trow and plant one right on his rear end, because that's what you are. I'm just amazed at the temerity of some of these people and the things they get up and say at these hearings, these Republicans, trying to defend the absolute indefensible. And I mean indefensible. A friend of mine, Paul Keel, from over at TPM Muckraker, wrote this, and he said you can look at it two different ways about Gonzalez. Number one, Alberto Gonzalez has been revealed to be, at best, an incompetent amnesiac, and at worst, an apparatchik determined to cover up the White House's total control of the Justice Department. He's lost even the confidence of administration loyalists on Capitol Hill and is nothing but a ghost with the title Attorney General. Or you can look at it the second way, number two. Alberto Gonzalez has run the gauntlet and he won. He doesn't have any credibility left to lose. And he certainly does not have any left to lose. The man has no credibility. He's admitted that he's a fool. How many times has he sat there in front of these commissions and said, well, you know, I've admitted that I was wrong, and, you know, we've said that, but, you know, we're doing better now, and I've admitted, yes, I regret that we've said they were let go for personal performance issues, and we shouldn't have done that, and, hey, it happened, dope, and you were in control. If I'm not mistaken, your desk has a nameplate on it that says Attorney General of the United States. I don't think Monica Goodling's desk had that on. See, you're the boss there. But to go forth in front of these committees and admit that he farmed out all the authority to go ahead and hire and fire for political reasons and that he finally put his... It's absurd. This is the theater of the absurd. The entire Bush administration has been the theater of the absurd. And, you know, like they always say, you could write a script like this for a movie and they'd throw it back in your face and say, come on, get real. This is too stupid. I was reading about this Chevron oil thing and Condoleezza Rice, and, you know, it made me wonder today. Should we be surprised now? You know how long it takes for justice to be carried out in this country for a death sentence at all. Should we be surprised that Saddam Hussein was hung so quickly? Should we? Because I'm led, frankly, to wonder if he didn't go to his grave with some deep, dark secrets about people in this administration. I'm wondering. I'm speculating here. What do you know about Chevron Oil, the kickbacks? You know, the Iraqi regime received at least $1.8 billion in kickbacks from companies in this Food for Oil program. The program allowed, as you know, Saddam's government to export oil to pay for food and medicine and humanitarian goods, and it seems Saddam himself was taking nice big kickbacks off of it. So, they put surcharges on the sale of the crude oil And the Iraqi regime skimmed about $228 million from the exports. And we find out that Mobil, and now part of ExxonMobil, they've denied any wrongdoing, but they're probably going to pay some fines. But the worst part about it is all this took place when Condoleezza Rice was working for Chevron Oil. And a lot of it went through while she was there. And one of her duties at Chevron Oil was to oversee foreign deals to see if they were legal and all this. Are you telling me that this went right past Condoleezza Rice and she didn't know a thing about it? Could that happen? I don't think so. And like I said before, I don't think there's a big oil tanker floating around out in the ocean with a big old name of Condoleezza Rice on it from Chevron Oil for nothing. I believe she had to know about this. She absolutely had to know about this. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to call the program. And somebody sent me a story that I thought was... Where is this? What part? I'm looking for what state this is in. I think it was in New Jersey. A service station that offered discounted gas to senior citizens and people supporting youth sports has been ordered by the state to raise its prices. Center City BP owner Raj Bhandari has been offering senior citizens a 2 cent per gallon price break and discount cards that let sports boosters pay 3 cents less per gallon. This is in Wisconsin. But the State Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection says those deals violate Wisconsin's Unfair Sales Act, which requires stations to sell gas for about 9.2% more than the wholesale price. Requires it. And Bhandari said he received a letter from the state auditor last month saying the state would sue him if he didn't raise his prices. The state could penalize him for each discounted gallon he sold, with the fine to be determined by a judge. And Bhandari, who bought the station a year ago, said he worries customers will think he stopped the discounts because he wants to make more money. About 10% of his customers used the discount card. So here he is, ordered by the state of Wisconsin to raise the price of his gas. It's a little bit weird, don't you think? I was going to talk about the economy some today, and didn't get around to it, and I guess we're a little too far along to get started on that right now. Speaking of Condoleezza Rice, I was reading this bio that was written about her, that was written by Marcus Mabry. And it makes you sick when you read it. And you wonder what kind of a bunch of ass-kissers these people are. It says, Rice was drawn to Bush. I think we all have surmised this for a long time now. But Rice was drawn to Bush. And in the bio it says, first of all, this is Condi talking. First of all, I thought he was wonderful to be around, she recalled, sitting on the couch in her State Department office. He was warm and funny and easy to be around. I thought he had just an incredibly inquisitive mind. Remember, this is Junior Bush she's talking about. I thought he had just an incredibly inquisitive mind. You could barely finish an explanation before he was digging into it. Bush was also a bad boy, and Rice, according to friends and family, had a thing for bad boys. Rice's friends insisted the attraction to Bush was platonic. But Brenda Hanbury Green, her Palo Alto hairdresser, who had spent... You want to know something about the gals? You talk to their hairdressers. You know that. And gals, you know that. Anyway, her Palo Alto hairdresser, who had spent years commiserating with Rice over how hard it was for successful black women to find a good man, noticed a change in Rice when she started working for Bush. Hanbury Green said, he fills that need. Bush is her feed. Even Rice's friends, most of whom happen to be Democrats, say her affection for Bush blinded her to his failings. She thought he could do no wrong, said one. And stepmother Clara Rice offered a simpler explanation for why she stayed. She said she just can't say no to that man. Well, well, well. Just can't say no to that man. What was the old musical? We got to wash that man right out of my hair. Oh, boy. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a minute. Don't go away, please.
Time for change. Killed the Tsar and his ministers. Anastasia screamed in vain. I rode a tank, held a generous rank. When the blitzkrieg raged and the bodies stank. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. Oh yeah. I was puzzling you with the nature of my game. Oh yeah. I watched with glee while you kings and queens fought for ten decades.
Hey, we're getting down to the finish line here today. It's been a good show, a lot of information. Good to hear from all of you. Glad to have all of you along with us over at iTunes and Democratic Underground. It was great to hear from Cindy Sheehan. Brave woman. Very brave woman. You know, I'm so hopeful that... So in hope, I guess I should put it, that the Democrats don't cave on this funding bill for the war. I think we're going to know, I think we already know, that this surge is not working. Now they're putting it off till September when they're going to tell us, well, maybe in September we'll know then. No, I think we know now. The killings have not gone down. The killings of our American troops have gone up. Civilians dying by the score. And, you know, a thought occurred to me the other day that I think it's become more clear every single day that the Pentagon and the Bush regime enablers won't listen to the American people or to their representatives in Congress. So at what point does the military just quit on a regime? Will they quit? Or are they true believers that they'll always... be compliant cannon fodder to send into the meat grinder that Iraq has become. We shall see. Courage, Democrats. Courage. That's what we need from you. Political courage to do the right thing. And if you don't, you're going to suffer the fury of Democratic voters everywhere, as you well should. If you don't hold the line on this, put the line in the sand and do what's right. For once, band together and do what is right for the American people. Forget your political careers if you can do that. Do the right thing. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I do want to remind everybody that this is a listener-supported program. You can make a contribution to the program at theguyjamesshow.com. And we hope you will. Thanks for being with us today. You are listening to The Guy James Show and Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.